So Otis, we obviously know you pretty well, but for the purposes of the audience, tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah, well, I am the principal and leadership and success coach, aka founder of Tribe and Purpose. And where I came from, I grew up in Texas, went in the Army, drove tanks for a little while, flew around in helicopters, in the back of helicopters, not driving them. They don't let me drive. Flew around the back of helicopters for a while, went up to Alaska, discovered how to make ice bridges. And that was my catalyst to join Special Forces. And I spent the rest of my career and as a Green Beret going all over the world. Some of the coolest spots, one of those, some of them were my guys and I, we'd look at each other and go, God, we're getting paid for this. And then right along with those, we look at each other and go, God, they ain't paying us enough for this. A lot of those places all over the world. My career balanced out very nicely in that case. I retired from the Army about 11, 12 years ago now and went into the business world. Did a lot of program management and business development, helping businesses achieve their next level of success. And then I flipped that into what I'm doing now, which is executive leadership coaching and running Tribe and Purpose to help our tribe members fulfill their purpose, achieve their purpose, pursue their purpose, and build a tribe around it so they can have more success and happiness in life.
With some of these podcasts, have fun doing myth busting, right? And if there's one perception that you could tip on its head that the rest of the world or the outside world has of Special Forces folks, what would that be?
We are the true founders of team. If you want to know how to run a team, build a team, tap a Green Beret on the shoulder, because we've done it everywhere from the mountains of Switzerland to the shitholes of Afghanistan. We build teams, highly successful, highly professional teams that operate with flow and are successful in every mission they've never been asked to do.
I love that. I think that's deep on many levels. And I guess I'll dive into it a little bit more, because I think the public perception of a Special Forces operator or personnel is like this singleton person, you know, who is a Rambo type person all off on their own doing things and thriving. But to Otis's point, right, it is amazingly about the team culture and at all levels of the team, finding problems within the team, solving problems within the team, finding avenues to grow. Everything about that team culture is alive and well. And I would also argue that in addition to that, a myth that I would bust that I busted all last week and for the past several years is Special Forces. We are, you know, physically adept in that we are able to do things and accomplish things physically that I think a lot of other people don't have the mental game to try and overtake. But I would argue that another huge myth that I like to bust is that we're teachers. And in fact, you know, we're force multipliers and we go into other areas as a team, no matter what size of a team. It could be a two-person team, a split team of six or a full operational detachment. And we teach through linguistic barriers and combat and austere environments. And we teach and we empower those indigenous armies and those other peoples to actually solve problems on their own, therefore not having to rely on external support all the time as well. And that's a level of teaching that I think that people just don't really understand the complexity of it. And I think it's a huge drawback to our transition, special operators transitioning out of the military into the civilian world, that that ability to force multiply is huge. And it's one of the things that corporate America is very much lacking at the moment.
Well, I love to always say, we're Tom Sawyer. We teach you how to paint, how to whitewash that fence, and then we're going to sit back and watch and let you whitewash that fence all day. Our job is to work ourselves out of a job. It is that. It is to set up the capabilities so that our partner nations, if you in a broader sense, can do the job. So you know what? When you mentioned force multiplier, that means that the U.S. Army, the U.S. military doesn't have to be there because they're doing it themselves. That's the force multiplier. And that teaching, the teaching comes, the success in the teaching comes from the cultural adaptability. There we go. There's a better word. The cultural adaptability, because we study culture. We study the culture, the targeted culture we're going to. And then that is ingrained into our system. I mean, I do that now. If I'm going to work with a new business, new client, I dive into their culture. What's going on? What's it about? How do they talk to each other? What do they do? How do they do it? How do they treat each other? What do they do on Friday afternoons? All those sort of things. I dive into that because if I understand their culture, I can communicate to them and I can help them grow and have more success by understanding how to communicate that message to them successfully.
And again, back to project management, since this is a project management podcast as well, right? We teach communication. But far too often in industry, especially, we try and only communicate at the comfort level to which we want that message to be sent, right? But greater communication, Angus, as you know, is about communicating to people in a manner to which the message will best be received. And it's understanding that I might not have all those tools, but I can gain those tools by doing exactly what Otis said, doing that area preparation, that understanding of the culture and having that wherewithal to say, I don't have all the answers, but before I go there, I'm going to get as many of the answers as I can to best set myself up for success, but more importantly, to set them up for success, because if I can better communicate to them in a manner that will be received best by them, I can thereby impact them in a manner that they've never been impacted before.
And before we let Angus ever join back in the conversation, I mean, is he here? Angus. No. You know, I refer to that, Scott, is my metaphor, my analogy, whatever the right, some grammar person teach me how to, which one's which, I don't know, but is feeding the beast. And in order to feed the beast and keep the beast happy, right? Because what do you want the beast to go wild? A hungry beast is a dangerous beast, right? You go out in the wild, you get a hungry grizzly bear. Ooh, look out. But you get a big, fat, happy grizzly bear, he's going to go take a nap. You're okay. If you think about communication in that sense, when does the beast want to eat? What does the beast want to eat? And how do they want to eat? You have to understand that, whether you're referring to the beast as the, you know, the hierarchy above you or the team members below you and you're communicating. If you don't know how they digest information, you can blab all day long and ain't nobody going to get it. I can throw on my Texas draw and talk nice and slow and throw out a whole bunch of conjugated words that don't make sense to people. But you know what? My fellows down in Texas are going to understand. People from Chicago, uh-uh.
No, 100%. Angus and others on my team have laughed at me because I always say, you can lead the horse to water, but you can't make the jackass drink, right? And far too many people, consultants, entrepreneurs, they have a pond of water that they've been, you know, they've nurtured a spring, they've got the pond going. And then they grab people by the scruff of the neck and they're like, drink from this water. And, you know, and it's that one-sided look that, you know, but this is clear water. And you're going, I don't like water, but this is clear water. And it's leading that horse to water. And they're just shaking their head and not want, because you're not communicating in synergy with what they're looking for. And you've got to communicate on that level that is best retained by them, not what you want. What you want doesn't matter, is a corporation. It's, you know, perceptions, reality, and all these other stocks and sayings I can throw out. You've got to communicate to them in a way that before you even start grabbing them, you don't have to grab them by the scruff of the neck anymore. They want to drink the water. They understand the benefits of it and all the work that you put in the nurturing that spring and getting it all well. And they don't mind, you know, that the pond might be ringed by some other things, you know, some flora, fauna, whatever, but you lead them to water and you want to drink the water that you presented to them instead of fighting you at every step of the way. And it's overcoming those hurdles and those obstacles and truly getting them to the water and having them happily drink that is like your Tom Sawyer analogy, right? It's now I can step back and you're drinking from the pond. You're drinking and you're hydrating and you're doing all the right things. My work here is almost done. Now I've got to put in the finishing touches at certain points.
So I mean, that's surprisingly empathetic when you look at it through the lens of, you know, I'm looking at you two as these, you know, steely hard special forces operators. You talk about language, you talk about understanding, you talk about nurturing, right? That's right. Empathy, if you want to put it under the umbrella of empathy. So I love this stuff because I know people like you guys all over the world, and I do really truly understand with my coaching hat on where you're all coming from, because you can apply similar to performance athletes, coaching environments. So what I want to come to is with organizations that have so much at stake asset wise, why is it that executive suites or senior management consistently fail to deliver on things like empathy, nurturing, communications?
Because they lack confidence in themselves. 100%.
Oh, wow, that's deep.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't believe that you can do the job, or let me rephrase that. If you believe that that guy who's your deputy is smarter and better than you, and you're afraid for your job, you're in the wrong job. Mm-hmm. You're weak in your position.
And it's not only lack of confidence in your abilities, it's lack of confidence that there even is a problem to begin with. It's complacency in, you know, everything is perfect. We have new hires. We have this, we have our product. It's out there. We have a market share. We have capitalization, blah, blah, blah. It's overconfidence that there's no problem to be fixed. And that's another kind of that mental thing. And Otis will tell you, I am always looking at things like, you know, and I've said to the team as well, right? Like, got it. We're doing well. We've trained 12,000 this year. Like, how do we keep doing that? How do we keep scaling properly? And it's overconfidence coupled with complacency that kill C-suite executives, because they rise to a point, they have the title, they have the salary package, the stock options, they have all that, and then they've arrived, right? There's like this whole, I worked through my MBA program and I worked through this and I've worked here and I put 10 years in the company or more, and I'm here now. I don't have to do anything else. But for a Green Beret, I'm here now means now the work begins, right? And now there is no confidence with that. It's like, thank you for the title. Thank you for the salary package and the stock options and all that. Now the work begins, because, and it's not an inability to earn, because a lot of executives do in fact earn their salary and they put a lot of stuff in there, but it's just understanding and again, adaptability, right? Being adaptable and non-complacent in understanding that there's always things to fix and you always have to, and I'm just putting the final pages on General McChrystal's new book, you know, Risk, a User's Guide, and talking about, you know, gap analysis and saturation. And that's one of the things that organizations are just, they're really effing up by the numbers, because they just, I've arrived, we're good. And I've had Fox Business on this morning, right? Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, Uber, all these big companies are down right now because of, and I'm not accusing any single executive of being complacent within those companies, not that they're listening anyway, but you've just got to always be adaptable, always be looking at that next ridge line, right? Because, you know, when you get to that point, it's not a time to like, all right, I've arrived and the work is done. That's where the work just starts.
So I think you both mentioned the phrase force multiplier. So, and Scott, to your point there, rather than us like point the gun sight at the executive per se, let's have a look at how the behavior of the executive impacts as a force multiplier, right? So if we're not getting it right, we're sort of self-sabotaging within our organization. But
It's the do as I do. Don't right. do as I say, do as I do. When you lead by example, you know, the little metaphor, here we go again, metaphor analogy that I always use is red shirt Tuesdays. Well, if I'm going to set up red shirt Tuesday for my team, but then I show up wearing a gray shirt, what is that saying? That shows that I don't think red shirt Tuesday is that important. So why do I have to do red shirt Tuesday if the boss doesn't do red shirt Tuesday? You know, think about those meetings. You know, that's one of my favorites because it's always a pet peeve for me. If I show up on time or 5 minutes early, because if I'm not 5 minutes early, I'm 5 minutes late. If I show up late consistently, which I've had a couple of people I've been in meetings with, bosses, whatever you want to call them, that were that way, then why the heck should I? Why the heck should I bust my butt to get there on time when the meeting doesn't start on time? Because obviously time is not important to that person. Time is, it's their time and it's not your time.
Yeah.
And that's,
and again, right? These are the environments. And I always laugh at Simon Sinek, right? Because Start With Why was fantastic. And then he studies people like Otis and says, you know, literally people like Otis and says, leaders eat last. And it's this whole do as I say mantra. And it's a New York Times bestselling book, right? But he studies the methodology, the mentality of leaders. And a large piece of that book was on the military mindset and military leaders, right? And he says, you know, when you're at a field exercise and the chow truck comes in and you let your troops go eat first and you're the one always doing that, it's that leading by example and is putting the right things and following down. If you have a corporate culture to where it truly is, you guys are on this side of the house, and once you hit this C-suite level, then you can just do whatever you want, right? You're exempt from all this. That's where there's a massive disconnect. And again, right, like I saw it 3 days last week with an organization that I'm going to say has done this even better than special operations. It is insane when you get it right, what right looks like and how amazing that feels to outsiders like me who see what right is going on in those environments, because it's truly amazing when at all levels of the company, from, you know, the Walmart door greeter to the CEO, everybody's empowered. Everybody understands and communicates the corporate message all at a level that is truly with purpose. And I wrote down when Otis said tribe and purpose, I want to dive back into tribe. We all get tribe, right? But purpose. So how do you inject purpose, Otis? This is specifically for you, and Angus, you're as a coach as well, right? And as far as, you know, Angus is being an elite athletic coach, how do you inject purpose into doing something rather than just show up to draw a paycheck or show up to play a game? Like, how do you drive purpose at all levels of the organization?
Well, you have to define it first. So, you know, and one of the things I work with people on is making sure that their purpose, particularly business leaders, business owners in particular, does their personal purpose align with their business purpose? And so you have to define that. And once that's defined, then you have to sell it. There's that four-letter word that everybody goes, ah, I'm not a salesman, right? I've had many conversations, ironically, over the last 2 or 3 weeks about sales. You got, as a leader, you have to sell what you want to get done. And that is purpose. And when your team buys into that purpose and they agree and the team member's purpose aligns with the organization's purpose, then you're walking towards flow. And what flow is that ultimate performance level of an organization when everybody knows what everybody else will do and how they will react in situations. You know, new proposal comes in, or you get a list of questions back from the customer that you have to adjust your proposal, and you've got a short timeline. Who's going to freak out and light their hair on fire? And who's going to go, dude, we got this. Let's go. Crunch me some more, you know. Let's get some numbers going, right? That's when you know that and know how your team's going to show up and react in all these situations. That's flow. But you can't get there until you have purpose And purpose is that guiding light for the organization, which also drives to keep it going in that same sense, which also drives the core values of the organization. And when people, when the members of the organization, no matter how big or small it is, when they align with, they believe in the purpose and they've bought into the purpose and they align with the values, that's when you can start to achieve flow.
And another thing I'll double down on here, flow and purpose is also about protecting that for the greater good within the company, right? In fact, if somebody doesn't buy in or is in a, unable to buy into the purpose and the flow of the organization, they will be disruptive to everything. One person out of 1,000 can truly be that first cancer cell that starts to spread around. So when you do identify your purpose and you have your flow, you have to protect it at all costs, right? And it doesn't mean that, you know, Bobby's not a great employee. It just means that, and Bobby could have an amazing set of skills, but if Bobby's not buying into the purpose, you know, for DOL coach, my company, or for the company that he's attached to, he needs to take those skills elsewhere and go to somewhere where he has purpose so that you protect that purpose at all costs. And it's not being capitalistic or it's not being unfair. It's truly protecting the greater good, right? It's protecting the organization and the buy-in that everybody buys into at the cost temporarily for Bobby. So it's making sure that Bobby has the right place to do his stuff as well. And that right place might not be with your organization. And you have to find those and bring people in, because otherwise, again, it's cancerous. And people always get irritated at me when I throw out the word cancerous, but it's a great visual, right? Because it spreads, like metastasizes throughout the entire organization. And then it will quickly. I've seen it in too many travels to even count with corporate clients and everybody else, that they have cancerous elements within and they don't understand the cost for that it's doing to that purpose. And to Otis's words, the flow of the entire organization, how disruptive it is.
It is. I mean, it's, you know, that old saying, you don't have to call it cancerous. You can say one bad apple spoils the bunch, right? I mean, you throw a bad apple in the barrel and what's it going to happen? I mean, heck, I've seen it happen in my refrigerator a couple of times. So, you know, it's that sort of thing. One bad apple, one bad lemon, it causes all the other ones to go bad rapidly. So it's, if you identify that, let's go back to our little bag of apples in the refrigerator in that fruit drawer, right? You see that bad apple, you pull it out as soon as you see it and you get rid of it. The other five apples in that bag are going to last. Whereas you leave the bad apple in that bag, guess what? I'm not going to go into the biology because I have no clue what that means, but I just know that's what happens. And that's the same thing. If you got a person on your team that is negative Ned, negative Nancy, he's anti everything that you're doing and doesn't ever want to do anything positively, and it's always a force to get that person to perform, it's probably time to shorten your payroll a little bit and ask him to go find something else to do where he can excel at being negative.
I heard a quote last week that sarcasm and pessimism aren't expertise, and yet we tend to put a lot of stock into sarcastic and pessimistic people because, oh man, they know something bigger than what I know, or I can't challenge that or anything. And it's not expertise. Honesty and transparency leads closer to expertise than sarcasm and pessimism do. And yet we tend to err on the side of the sarcastic and the pessimistic, myself included sometimes. I'm a very sarcastic person, as everybody knows. But
you know, so, Joe.
Being self-aware, like before somebody else calls me on it here.
I want to come back to the concept of flow state, though, because it's a fascinating subject, because, you know, we all understand that optimum flow leads to optimum output, optimum performance. But the inputs, actually, I've been doing a lot with athletes these last 3 weeks, the athletes I'm working with right now, about trying to get them understand that the outputs that they actually want to achieve needs a lot of input, right? You don't, it sort of doesn't really correlate, does it? The amount of, it's not like a linear function. I put in 10 of something here and I'm going to get 10 plus something out of here. if you look at it, it's some kind of like funnel diagram. And like you guys, I was just thinking about, and I'm sort of flow state, and I'm also thinking about you guys going back to the start of the conversation with, you've got engineering skills and linguistic skills. So we're now into left brain, right brain functioning, right? So let's come back. What flow state is not easy. So what are some of the foundations for, beyond having a transparent vision around that the individual can work on to be working towards some state of flow?
The individual cannot. It's the leader that sets the standards and creates the conditions. And the conditions start with that communications, start with the setup. You know, I think it's from Dave Ramsey and Scott. I know you'll help me with this one. It's the, you know, as the manager, if you don't set that conditions right, if you don't tell them what they need to do, make sure they're trained in how to do it.
Results areas. Yeah.
And then, yeah. You'll, it's been a while since I read it, but it's that sense, you know? So the failure, I think it's, what does he have? I think it's like three or four things. And the failure for the performance, like 85% of the time, is on the leader because they don't set the conditions properly for the person. So that's first. As an individual, if you're looking to achieve, be part of a flow organization, then it goes back to, what are your core values? What are your beliefs? And do they align with your organizations? Because if they don't, if you're faking it, if you're not authentic, you'll never achieve flow. You can bust your butt all day long because you're just a hard worker. But if you're doing something that is against your values, outside of your values, outside of what your beliefs are and what your vision is, you will never be truly part of that organization and truly achieve high performance, which is what flow requires.
And Angus, you said a word there, right? The vision, right? So once that leader does in fact have the vision for the company, which I'll argue that most good leaders and solid leaders do have a solid vision, right? But it's understanding what capabilities then need to be within the organization to see that vision through. And then also, far too many leaders fail because they don't understand. And notice I'm going straight back to an ODA here, so you'll see where I'm going immediately, right? But most leaders don't understand that complementary efforts are good, right? Like that you don't want, even on a special forces operational detachment or an A team, you get guys who are, you know, heavy metal headbanger in the gym all the time. And then you'll get guys who, when they put on their civilian clothes, look like skater punks. Right. And they're out there, but it's a complementary aspect of all the stuff that goes together. And again, looking at DOL, we had a team social a week plus ago, and I looked at the team and I said, man, it's not about, I'm gonna throw out a word, diversity, and it's not about, like, you know, maintain diversity, but it's understanding where gaps in the capability that you're looking to achieve are and bringing in the complementary efforts to support that. Because I didn't build DOL by going out and finding every high performing Green Beret I knew that had ever run a project. And in fact, I tried to do that in the first iteration of a CPT build, and it was almost disastrous because I had too many people that looked a lot like each other. There was no complementary skill sets throughout it. And that was one of my learning curves to grow into a leadership role, that I want people who are different. I want people who are drastically different. I want people that when I throw out whether it's a social media message or a blog post or a web page or anything in the company, that they go, it looks like this, but you just got to tweak it a little bit, right? Because their lens is much different than mine. Those complementary efforts make the strength of the entire organization holistically strong. And it's all those, you know, a chain is only as strong as its weakest link, right? So yeah. Again, going back to it, that if you do have weak links within there, educate those links to get them stronger, because complementary efforts are key to see the vision through.
Yeah, 100%.
I just want to jump on, you make me want to bring up my favorite philosopher, Yogi Berra, you know, and just in that sense of, you know, life imitates baseball. You know, that's one of my favorite phrases besides the, what time is it? Do you mean now? from Yogi. But, you know, when you think about that and you think about your baseball teams, sorry, Angus, you could insert cricket, I guess, or something like that. But when you think about that, the team that has the highest, you know, the highest number of all-stars is not the team that always wins. You know, it is the team that has the chemistry. Chemistry, you hear them talk about that. What is chemistry really? Chemistry is flow. That is when the organization performs at its best, whether it's on the rugby pitch or on the baseball diamond. When the organization has flow, chemistry is what the announcers call it. That's the organization that'll win. Chemistry. That organization, I can't remember who said it. It may have been a Sun Tzu or Lao Tzu thing that said something along those lines about how that the army with the most understanding of itself, that's Sun Tzu, is the know thyself better than you know your enemy, and you not have to worry about the outcome of 1,000 battles or something along those lines, right? In my very good, I'm always good at quotes, aren't I? Loving them.
But in that Chinese, Otis.
Yeah, I know, man, it's bad. But I got some inspiration in here somewhere, but it is that sort of sense that you can create in your organization. You can create chemistry in your organization. And that chemistry, oh, by the way, can be good or bad too. And here's a whole another thing. We could spend another hour talking about that.
Well, we could. But I think, and bearing in mind, I know you're a man of the worldly importance. You've got appointments up the yin yang. So let's talk about the Green Beret Leadership Program you've developed?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I do. It's one of the programs that we have at Tribe and Purpose. And it will walk you through an understanding of who you are, get that foundation, because you always got to know where you're at on the map before you can plan a route to go anywhere, right? Know who you are, how to create a team around who you are and in that success, and how to plan to solve a problem, implement that plan and execute that plan, supervise that plan in its execution, and then constantly monitor and put yourself into a constant state of not only improvement for yourself as a leader, but your team and your organization in that development. And I'm doing the loop-de-loop thing for those of you in radio land. You got to follow it. It's a continuous process. You digest what you did, you review what you did, you look what you did right, you build on success, and you look what needs help. And that's what you build off of. And you continue that. And if you continue that, you will always have better success than you did last time.
And I've watched Otis as he's built the Green Beret Leadership Program and morphed in the Tribe and Purpose. And it's amazing because he does exactly that, right? Like, you know, in the Army, we say, you know, you're always improving your foxhole and your fighting position, right? Like you're in an after action review or AAR, we say things like, what's something we should sustain and what's something we should improve? And far too many leaders look upon all the things to sustain and get all the feel goods, and then kind of finger drill the things to improve. Whereas Otis and others in this space that I like and respect are always continually improving and always making those adaptions to grow into the next level. And one of the things that I liked most about Otis, you know, the seven levels are coming up here in a second, right? But there's an emotional energy in leadership as well. And Otis is accredited and certified through IPEC for the seven levels. And I always butcher these. So it's a running joke between Otis and I that sometimes I'll say five levels or eight levels or whatever, but
Otis talked to his levels you're feeling that day, right?
I'm always feeling two or three extra. So, but talk to us about leaders and the emotional state of leaders and how it is an ebb and flow as well, as far as continual improvement through that lens.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I won't go into all seven levels of energy, because you know, the basics that I want people to take away of the energy levels is there's positive and negative. That's it. You know, there's, we can define it and deal with those things. Give me a shout and we can dive into those, or you go to my YouTube channel. There's videos about those. But really, there's positive and negative energies. And then the other foundational part is you get to choose. You get to choose how you show up. Now, are you that guy in the bar that the drunk dude walks up and smacks you or spills his beer all over you and you punch him? Or are you the guy that goes, dude, you probably ought to take it back and, you know, go sit down and, you know, have some water and coffee, or your mates need to get you out of here pretty quick. You know, so which guy are you? Because you get to choose in every situation, no matter what it is, no matter whether it's, oh crap, it's raining, or, oh cool, it's raining. You get to choose. That's the thing about these energy levels. That's the real foundational piece of it. You can dive into it and understand some intricacies of each of them, but in the end, you get to choose whether you show up positive with a positive outlook, seeing opportunity and creating visions for success, or a negative where you feel sorry for yourself or you blame others for things going on. You get to choose that. And that's, man, that's the foot stomper, the clap your hands, whatever school of thought you went to, the hoo-hoo, that's it. You get to choose how you show up. You get to choose whether you show up with a positive energy level, positive attitude, or a negative energy level or a negative attitude.
And to that end, you also get to choose whether you want to be the innovative and growing leader, or you want to be the complacent and dying leader in the organization, right? And I'm always telling people, to every hammer, all problems look like a nail, right? So if you're a hammer and you're walking around, any problem is going to look like a nail, and you're going to want to swing the hammer and hit it on top of the head, right? So do you want to choose to be a hammer, or sometimes you want to, you know, you can be a knife blade, you can be a screwdriver, you can be all these other tools. And if you're one-dimensional, unidimensional only, you don't get to look at it through the lens of other tools. Every problem looks like a nail to you, and that's the perception that you have. So it's understanding where you are and that you do have a choice in life, how you react, how you're perceived, how you want to grow your team, whether or not you want to be complacent, whether you're tired. There's a whole lot of choice to have in the leadership realm.
Heraclitus said, to a comb, every path is straight.
Hey, so we've had Chinese philosophy. Is that Greek philosophy, Otis?
Stoicism there, yeah. Heraclitus.
Any other philosophies you want to draw down from?
Well, I threw out Yogi Berra too, you know.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, a bit of US sporting philosophy.
Yes, yes.
I was thinking about, there's one thing all three of us overlap on, is the transformation of people to create things like flow state. It's a work in progress, right? The human race is a permanent work in progress. Now, we all know intrinsically the value of being selfless in the form of leadership to help other people fly and flow. So I'm going to challenge you both a little bit. So if you look at a lot of, whilst a lot of companies understand they have to do training, or they have an HR department that says do training, and they have a budget to spend, and then they just tick the box and move on, and then they don't really really service the needs of the organization or the teams that need training. What would you say if you went to, well, I'm not asking you to do an elevator pitch, but how do we say to executives, you get this wrong, this is where it hits your bottom line. You get this right, this is where it hits your bottom line.
Me, it's your keeping your high performers on your team.
Yeah.
If you do not take care of your high performers, and Scott, maybe you remember who said the train them so that they can leave, but treat them so that they won't. I don't remember who said that, but there's a lot of truth in that, because, you know, if you take care of your team mentally, professionally, personally, because it's a whole person, it's not just the guy that's there 9 to 5. You take care of your team, provide them opportunities, challenges, fulfill their human needs. One of, without diving into all of them, but Tony Robbins talks about 6 human needs: significance, connection. Maslow's hierarchy of needs talks about providing value, being significant again. You know, am I a contributor? Those are things that we as people need. And if you don't recognize and acknowledge that of your team, particularly your high performers, the people that are just oxygen thieves, they're going to stick around as long as you pay them. And that's a whole nother problem. But your high performers, they're not going to be happy and they're going to leave. And when they leave, man, you're going to feel it in your bottom line. Not only because you're going to lose their performance, but to replace them is at least double their salary. Think about that. If you got an executive that you're paying $150K, it's going to cost you $300K to replace that person. Think about that. That's a bottom line problem right there.
And, you know, post-COVID environment, organizations have never been more constrained on resources within, right? Like we're hybrid working, we're remote working, back to the office, wherever we are on the scale. But in this environment where organizations are trying to protect the finances, the people, and the technology within the org, right? This is one of the reasons when you provide a valuable service as well, like a project management certification that focuses on skills so that they don't have to worry about translating the exam score that somebody got in a certification exam into what role they can actually do within the organization, right? When you're doing things, if you're not understanding the cost that comes from replacing your people, and sometimes there's nothing you can do, right? When one of your people outgrows what you can do for them as far as financially, salary, or anything else, they're no longer a good fit for you because you can't afford to take care of them. And that way, that's a painful lesson, but sometimes they have to move on elsewhere, but you still have that cost, right? And it's understanding that if you don't take care of your people, you're not going to have anything left for them at all or for anybody, because that's palpable to an organization or those. And we see it in the top 10 corporations that work for in Nashville or Denver or whatever. There's all these lists, right? And in Google and their NatPods and their don't be evil, you know, mantra and all that stuff, right? Like there's these highly competitive things, openings, but you've got to protect the people that are in there to protect that flow state that we know is so important.
So we're coming to a close.
Evil is relative.
The dark side serves a purpose.
Yes.
So you're both successful veteran entrepreneurs, and you both know I could talk to you both for hours and basically go nowhere or somewhere. But we need to bring this to a close. So if you could, with all your experience, life, military, business, family, you look out at the world today, if you could look at something and say, right, let's hit the reset button on that. That's a complete snotty mess. Just hit the reset and let's go back and set the foundations again to rebuild it or recalibrate that thing. What would the one thing be post-COVID that you'd hit the reset button on?
Trust.
Oh, trust. Man, took the word right out of my mouth.
What did you say?
The same exact thing.
Trust. Trust, man. You got to trust. You got to trust people. You got to trust yourself.
Yeah. And
it's a two-way street, right? The trust triad is one of the things I talk about. Trust yourself to make the best decisions. Trust your team to perform the job you hired them to perform. And when you have those two together, the third leg of the triad is your team trusts you to always have their best interests in mind.
Yeah.
That's, and you have trust, man. Trust can take you a long way, but it has to be both ways.
Say that again, Otis, because I can't even double down on that. Like, that's huge. The trust triad. One more time for the people in the back.
Yeah. Trust yourself to make the best decisions that you can with the information you have and the time you have available. Trust your team to perform the job that you hired them to do. And then your team will trust you to always have their best interests in mind whenever you make a decision.
I can't add to that. That's perfect.
So we close on a high. That's the showstopper, Otis McGregor, the showstopper.
I dropped my mic, but it cost too much.
Otis, where can people find you? Tribeandpurpose.com.
Tribeandpurpose.com. LinkedIn. Go to tribe-purpose.com. Click on the Get Started button. Sign up for Monday Moments newsletter. And right after you do that, schedule a time to give us a chat, and we'll see if Tribe and Purpose is a good fit for you. And, you know, by the way, if you're a good fit for our tribe.
Awesome. Love it. You won't regret it. Thanks so much for the time, Otis. It's great to talk to you again. Angus, thanks for setting it up.
No worries. Cheers, guys. Good to see you both. Have a great holiday.
Safe travels, Angus.
Ciao. Bye-bye. Thank you.